Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome back to The Advisor. My name is Lisa Urbanski, and I am so excited to be here. I'm excited to be here with our guest today. His name is George Haymaker, and he is a former entrepreneur who has faced some of life's darkest challenges, battling a pain pill addiction, alcoholism, anxiety, low self-esteem, and a mind that often felt like his worst enemy. And I'm really excited to be able to talk to him today because I, full disclosure, I also went through a pain pill addiction and spent 10 years of my life fighting for freedom and searching for that. So I have a lot of passion for this topic as well. And to bring a very, very intelligent man who has done this stuff and now teaches the stuff onto the show that we could share it with you. That makes me feel really good about life. What a way to celebrate a Friday. I just want to thank our sponsor, iHeartRadio and Spreaker. We love you guys. Thank you so much for your support. And to our audience, thank you for your support. Please like and subscribe and leave some comments in the comment section if you're struggling with anything, including addiction of any sort. We want to help. Welcome back to the show, George.
Hey Lisa, so great to be back. Thanks for having me again and great to see you and hello everyone.
So great to see you. Your last episode, really sparked a lot of conversations, and people want to know more about the brain and the science behind addiction. And I know today we're going to be talking about the neuroscience of addiction and how recovery happens in the brain. And as you and I talked about before I hit the record button, people struggle with many different types of addiction. So even though we're talking about, being addicted to pain meds and alcohol, people can be addicted to, like you said, behaviors and shopping and different things like that. So I'm really excited for you to jump into this topic today.
Like you say, addiction is addiction. It's all kind of ice cream, just has different flavors. But at the end of the day, we're searching for something that we're not getting out of everyday life. And
Yes.
that's what most people turn to addictive substances and behaviors for, is to find reward in some other way because they're not getting it through everyday life. And they're also perhaps trying to cope with difficult mental experiences that are really bothering them and really affecting their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to start off with I guess it's a little bit of a difficult question. But I want to talk about dopamine. In your own words, how does dopamine play a role in addiction? And what is dopamine and related to addiction?
Yeah, so dopamine's the most famous neurochemical. It's a neurotransmitter in the brain, and there are numerous what are called feel-good transmitters, and that's one of them. And so it's a chemical, and it travels through connections between neurons in our brain. So in our brain, we have about 85 billion neurons, and there's a network in the brain, or a region, or a section called the reward system, the limbic network, otherwise known as. And in that network, or part of the brain, region of the brain, dopamine is produced. And it is tied to motivation. So, if you think about having a pleasurable experience, there's the wanting to have the experience, and then there's the actual reward from the experience itself. So dopamine is tied to the wanting, to the motivation to seek an experience. Then there are other transmitters that are tied to the actual reward itself, like what happens when, we actually get the reward and we're enjoying the fruits of that. And those are typically endorphins of different types. And so dopamine is heavily tied to the motivation to seek out a reward. And so, like for those of us that have been addicted to behaviors or substances, I think we can all relate to the fact that, in my case, I had dealers that I would go see, and the moment I would have an idea, that it was time to go see the dealer, I would start to get this real flood of rewarding chemicals, like beginning just the ritual of knowing that I was going to go get it and then driving there and just all the stuff that led up to act, even before you got the drug, like you're just getting this flood of chemical, and that's dopamine. So it's what drives us to seek out a rewarding experience. So that's it in a nutshell. And I can go into more detail if you like about how it actually hijacks the brain and how it just the addictive substances take over any other form of motivation for anything else in our lives.
Yeah, I think help us understand why you talk about that dopamine reward of going to get your drug, going to the dealers, your stomach, you got these butterflies, you're feeling real good, you're going to feel even better in a second. How does that affect your ability to recover? And why is it so hard to break that pattern? And how can we start breaking that pattern?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions there. So let's start with what happens when we start doing drugs and alcohol, okay, or any addictive substance or behavior. And by behaviors, we're talking about, shopping, gambling, video games, food, sugar. I mean, you name it. There's a bunch of things that, give people reward and escape from.
Cell phone use,
Yeah, cell phone, social media, right?
social media. Yeah, the likes, getting the likes, those likes on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, and just think about like you walk down the street now or even through any kind of public place, and it dawns on me because I grew up, I'm a little older than maybe some of the audience, but I grew up at a time where we didn't have the cell phones, and everybody looked, you'd walk down the street or through a public place and people would look at each other. No one looks at each other anymore, and they are just, we're all staring into these phones. And it's all because that's an addictive pattern. And so I challenge any of us to try putting our phones down, put it in our pockets, and just walk around for a while without looking at your phone and find out what withdrawal feels like. Because you are reaping dopamine chemical from this pattern of being addicted to your phone. And so it'll just give you a little sense if you're not, if you've never been addicted to anything else, it'll give you a little sense of what withdrawal is like. So what happens is normal human beings that are not addicted to things, and we've been around for millions of years, human beings, and we're wired to get dopamine. We were wired to get dopamine for natural life pleasures, things that would help us stay safe, survive as a species, have babies so that the species would continue on. So things like eating food, drinking water, having a loving relationship, having sex, procreating babies, that type of thing. Those are all pleasurable experiences. We were hardwired to have pleasure from those because, the evolution was to have our species survive. Okay. So that's hardwired into us. Now, we all have about, if you think about a graph, a y-axis and x-axis, okay. We all have about 50. And think about the graph going from 0 to 1,000. Okay. We all have about a baseline of 50 animals, not animals, but animals of dopamine in our system at homeostasis. So that's enough dopamine to get us up out of bed and to have a desire, enough motivation to live life. Okay. Because if we had zero, we would just simply never get out of bed. So we all have about 50. And then when we have one of these natural life pleasures, we will get, increases. So when we have a great meal, we will get an increase of maybe to 100. Okay, so from a baseline of 50, to 100, it like doubles. You fall in love for the first time. Maybe it goes to 150. We all know what the pleasurable experiences are. I don't have to get into it, but you're basically going to go from 50 to 100 to 150. So maybe double to triple the amount of dopamine. Okay. And it comes up, it rises, and then it recedes. Okay. So the amount of dopamine that we get from these addictive substances and behaviors is anywhere between 3 and 10 times the amount that we would get from any natural life pleasure. So even like, and we're, you know, I mean, even smoking, drinking, gambling, all of these things give us more dopamine, more motivation to seek out the substance or the behavior than we get from any of these other natural life pleasures. That's a problem because the brain is geared to seek out reward. And so if these addictive substances and behaviors are giving us more reward, more dopamine, or the anticipation of reward, more motivation, then why would we ever pursue anything other differently than the addictive substance or behavior, right? Because the brain is pursuing the greatest amount of reward. And so that's the problem, is that the brain then deems these substances and behaviors as more important. It tags them as more important than any of these other natural life pleasures. The other problem is that our brains are designed to handle, 2 to 3 times the amount of dopamine from our baseline. They're not designed to handle, 10x and, way more dopamine. So in other words, what we're doing is we're trying to shove like 500 gallons of water through a garden hose. Our infrastructure is simply, and our brain is simply not designed to handle that amount of dopamine. And so if you were to take a fire hose and put it on a small little plant and unleash the fire hose on the plant, what would you do? You'd obliterate the plant, right? And so that's what we're doing in our brains, is we're obliterating our plumbing in our brains when we're flooding it with this much dopamine. And so what happens is, the longer that we use these behaviors and substances, the plumbing in the brain, which are basically the neurons, begin to fail and malfunction because we're flooding too much dopamine. And so they begin to shut down some of the receptors on the dopamines, which is what receives the transmission. The dopamine itself becomes less potent. And also, sorry, lost track of what I was going to say, but our infrastructure in our brain begins to malfunction and fail, okay? Because there's just too much dopamine, an artificially high amount that our brain was never designed to accommodate. Okay, so as it shuts down, less and less dopamine can get from one neuron to the next, meaning we're feeling less and less pleasure. And so our brain is still screaming out for this amount of reward because it's gotten used to it. But because the plumbing is starting to fail, we have to start doing more and more of it. That's what tolerance is. So when you find in addiction that you need to keep doing, you're chasing the first buzz that you ever got, and you're having to do more and more of the substance or the behavior to get the same level of buzz or just to feel normal, because normal starts to change for you. Like the old normal doesn't register anymore, like there's a new normal. And so for you to get that, you're having to do more and more of whatever it is you're doing, because the plumbing's starting to fail and the dopamine can't get through. And that's what tolerance is. And then what happens is, if we stop to do, if we, as addiction progresses, and if we stop doing the substance or the behavior, and then the dopamine recedes because it was so elevated artificially, and now it's going to tumble down, go way back down to baseline and below. So in other words, from 500 or 1,000, way back down to 50 or even below 50, that is what's called withdrawal. And that crash of dopamine from an artificially high level, way down to close to zero, is why we feel like crap. And so that's what cravings are all about. So now we're withdrawing, we're getting cravings because we've gone from way high in dopamine to way low. And so we need more of the drug just to get back up to what normal seems to feel like to us. And so that's really the insidious trap and cycle of addiction, is it elevates, it changes what normal feels like. Natural life pleasures, yeah, this is what I was going to say, is we no longer get dopamine reward from natural life pleasures. So no longer does eating seem important, no longer does, sex seem important or anything else. All that's important is the drug. And so that's what hijacking the brain is referring to. And that's why we get lost in this world of addiction, because the dopamine signaling is so much higher than it is for anything else in life that that's all our brain deems as important.
I call my addiction like the biggest love affair I've ever had in my life. Because I recall waking up every day. That's the first thing I would think about. It would be the last thing I thought about before I went to bed, but it was the most toxic relationship of my life. And when you talk about being stripped of that dopamine and like getting sober, waking up in the morning and not having that, I remember those were some of the lowest times of my life because my brain wasn't able to produce those chemicals. But then eventually, I started feeling better and better and better and better. So, can you talk to us about the process of recovery, what that looks like, and what people can expect, and how to make little steps so that you can start producing that chemical again?
So really what you're doing in recovery, and there's kind of two phases of it. One is dealing with the addiction itself and what needs to happen in the brain. The second part of it is, in recovery is, okay, well, why was I using drugs and alcohol or the behaviors in the first place? And how am I going to deal with those differently now that I'm not using drugs and alcohol? So that's what really recovery is about. So there's sobriety, and abstinence, getting rid of the addiction, and then there's recovery, which is building a new life, not using drugs and alcohol, but still finding joy in natural life pleasures again. Okay. So the first step is to get your brain right, and healed so that you can even contemplate building a new life. Because, as you and I both know, and anyone else out there that's ever been addicted, when you're coming off something, you're just trying to survive. Okay. And so you're not really in the mood to talk about what's going to happen, 6 months from now. It's like I'm trying to get through minute by minute of that day. And so that's what's happening, in the first 90 days of sobriety is, it's painful, because remember what I said before is that you're withdrawing. So you no longer have sources of dopamine because you're not using the drugs and alcohol. And so your brain is running at a real deficit for dopamine. So it's not even at homeostasis anymore. It's way below homeostasis, way below 50 and somewhere barely north of zero. And what you're needing to do is to have your brain heal, reset. So this whole reward network can start to feel enjoyment back down in the ranges that it was originally intended to feel then. And so it takes time, and it takes, time for the brain to actually heal. Because the wonderful thing about the brain is it can heal and it can change, and it's plastic, meaning it's healable, malleable, evolvable, changeable, adaptable. So it adapted to the addiction, and now it can adapt back. Okay. But, it's going to be uncomfortable, especially in the early days as you're withdrawing and the brain is trying to heal and reset itself. So, during this period, it's, important to try to make yourself as comfortable as possible. There are medications, if you're working with medical professionals to withdraw, there's medications you can take to make the cravings subside and make it more comfortable. But at the end of the day, it's still not going to be the most pleasant first 30 days, The first 30 days are not going to be the most pleasant days you've ever had in your life. But what we're then after is then to start to rebuild life in a different version, addressing any underlying patterns that were that are uncomfortable in our minds that maybe we were coping using behaviors, drugs, alcohol to help cope with those symptoms. Now we start to dive into those to figure out what they were, where they came from, why we kept reinforcing these patterns for all the years that we did, and then how can we reconstruct them in a more helpful way. And that's all part of what, I do in neuroscience coaching is help people understand how their brains work, how they've evolved to the point where they are. We really dive deep into things that are bothering them mentally, the negative thoughts, the negative emotions, the reactivity, the behaviors, because these things develop into patterns because we've rehearsed them and practiced them so much during our lives. We've gotten very good at them, and our brain has adapted to them and strengthened them as patterns because we've repped them out, we've repetitioned them. And the brain is very much into repetition. It responds to that in good and bad ways. And so what we're doing is trying to undo all those negative patterns and reconstruct them in more helpful ways based on working on a new identity for ourselves. So we've developed an identity that includes addiction and includes negative patterns that we're coping with, and that's been our identity. But now we're going to try to take that identity and rip, think of it as a house, and we're going to rip the house down, take the studs down of who we've been, what this identity is, and reconstruct it in a way that we'd love to have represent us. In other words, what are our values? What are our beliefs? What are our strengths? What are our needs? And we rebuild a vision of ourselves, of how we want to be. Like, we're not happy anymore with this old person that we've been. That's clear, and we want to find a new way. And that's what I help them do is, really understand what their strengths are, their values, how they want to live, their belief systems, and we reconstruct a new person, version of themselves, and write identity statements. And then we have something to build on. And it's this vision of themselves, okay? And then we start to reconstruct new thoughts. And I teach them how to do this, new ways of thinking, new ways of feeling, new ways of acting. And we begin to build new patterns that are in the image of this new identity. And so then we start to reinforce those. And the brain then begins to change. It physiologically, neurologically, these 85 billion neurons begin to shift around and remap themselves in the image of what this new person is becoming. But it doesn't happen until we start to practice this person. And so that's where the challenge is. And that's why change feels so hard to people, is because they don't have a plan. They don't understand how the brain actually works. They don't understand what's required to make change and have it last and stick. And so they just, and it's no fault of anybody's, they're just unknowing. And so that's what I help them do is lay out the plan and the framework and the understanding of where we're headed and how to get there. And then we work together over 90 days, putting the pieces together until, halfway into it, they're like, wow, I'm really starting to feel different. And I'm starting to enjoy natural life pleasures again. And so we celebrate those and we attach reward to those. And so now dopamine starts to get produced over these new things that we're starting to experience again. And we're never going to get, the type of dopamine spikes that we used to get with the drugs and alcohol. And frankly, we don't want them because that life proved to be, our brains can't handle it. And it proved to completely hijack our lives. And so we know we can't go there. And so now we're just going to reset everything, reestablish new priorities based on this new version of ourselves. And now we're going to start to realize, get some dopamine motivation from living a life that's in alignment with our values, our strengths, our beliefs, our needs, being kind to others, you know, just being this person that we've always really wanted to be, but for various reasons and the experiences that we've had in our lives, we never became that. You know, we grew up in a difficult circumstance and, you know, we were just trying to get by and survive and protect ourselves. And then we grew up feeling unsure of ourselves and self-doubting and lack of confidence and low self-esteem. And it could have been from a negative childhood, you know, experience. And so now we just went into our adulthood and we had these patterns. We don't know how they got there and they're uncomfortable and we have anxiety and we're depressed. And so then we started to use substances. The next thing you know, it got away from us and we're like, how the hell did I get here? And that's what happened to me. And so then I had to then, you know, strip the studs down, envision who I really wanted to be as a person, begin to lay the framework and the foundation and start to practice this new person that I wanted to be. And before I knew it, little by little, shifting very gradually, it's not like you wake up one day and say, you know, holy crap, I'm a new person. It's just gradual as the brain begins to put in these repetitions. It's the same thing. If you go to the gym and you start to work out, you're not going to get, you know, buff the very first day. You know, you have to be in it. You have to be committed, motivated, and dedicated. And little by little, you start to notice these incremental improvements, right? You don't lose. If you wanted to lose 20 pounds, you're not going to lose it tomorrow. You're going to lose it incrementally by engaging in healthy practices, sticking with it, repping it out, and gradually you start to lose the 20 pounds, right? And so that's exactly the brain. By the way, all those things that we just talked about, you know, are brain-related functions as well. The brain's involved in everything, right? I mean, it's the engine behind everything. So it stands to reason that anything that we're learning, anything new, such as being a new person, we know that it takes time. You know, we never got good, you know, learning a new instrument or learning a new language or learning a new sport overnight. We knew that we had to rep it out, practice it, stay dedicated and committed. That's exactly what learning how to be a new version of yourself is like. You are learning how to be a new version of yourself. It requires practice. It requires someone explaining to you how to become that person. Like, what's the plan? You know, you don't just go pick up a golf club and, you know, without any lessons and figure out, okay, this is how I play golf. You know, you need guidance and direction. And that's, so it's the same thing. I mean, it's the brain learning how to be different.
So, George, if someone is struggling right now, what are the what level of addiction do you work with? Is there different stages? You work with someone who's right in the problem. What is your ideal client?
So for me, I really want to work with someone after they've detoxed and,
So they've been
they,
clean. What do you mean by that? Detox, they've been clean from their substance for
yeah, they're not
at
going through.
least, they're
Yeah.
not
So
with in withdrawal. Okay.
yeah, they're not in withdrawal. So, you know, you're looking at, 7 to
30
4.
days.
Yeah. I mean, 7 to 14 days for sure.
Okay.
But even then, if I were to map it out perfectly, I'd say, you know, go to rehab, or go somewhere, get off substances for 14 to 28 days, and then you're more ready and right to be able to work with me so that, you know, we're able to kind of move forward.
Okay, perfect, perfect. And so, where can people find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Love to have you follow me. So it's George Haymaker on LinkedIn, but also I have a website, georgehaymaker.com. And there's a, you know, you can sign up for newsletters and all kinds of tips and stuff that I'll send you. But also there's a link for a free discovery call where if you just want to talk, you know, for 30 minutes without any pressure or pitching, you know, I'm happy to just talk about what's going on with you. It can be addiction or not. You can be coping with substances or behaviors or not. You could just be stuck mentally with these patterns that are really causing you to feel like you're stuck in your life and you're not, getting as much out of life as you would like. You're not living as the person you want to live as. Those are all things I can, talk you through and maybe shed some light on, what could be next for you.
What is the experience like when you picture yourself now? Can you look back? And I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, you talk about the dopamine never getting to the point where it used to with drugs, but I know for myself, some of the most beautiful experiences that I've had have been in my sober days, and they're so much more beautiful than anything any drug could have ever given me, because it wasn't fabricated, it was real, and I could feel it. So do you look back and do you see your old self and new self, and what does that feel like?
Yeah, so there's some other neurochemicals that we haven't talked about. One of the main ones is serotonin, which is all about well-being and especially as it's oriented around social connections and just, who you are as a person, and kind of your purpose and your meaning in life. And so what we get from living this new version of ourselves is we start to get off the dopamine spiking hamster wheel, and we start to enjoy other types of feel-good chemicals, endorphins, oxytocin from being in love and having these great relationships, serotonin from just this sense of overall well-being and satisfaction and, meaning and purpose in our lives. And I think you can relate that that feels different. It's more like it wells up within you from your heart and your soul up throughout your entire body. It's when you get goosebumps, that's kind of what you're feeling, right? Because you're just proud of yourself and you're happy with who you are and you're living in alignment. Your thoughts, feelings, and actions and behaviors are in alignment with who you want to be. It's like when all of that is in alignment and there's no fracturing, there's no differentiation between who you want to be and who you are, that is like a hell of a good feeling. And so that's what we're after, is to have no f internal friction, to have everything in alignment, and to actually live the life that we're designing, that ideal version of ourselves. Okay. And so, we've just migrated from this chaotic, never-ending search for that perfect buzz, that dopamine spike. To now we're in search of other feel-good chemicals that feel different, but we're in this state of calm and peace and reflection, and we just know that we're on the right path. We know that this life is so much more rewarding. There's no chaos. There's no you and I were talking before the show about the nervous system just being constantly activated when you're in addiction. It's like you've got this electricity running through you and you just never calm down. And it's just taxing, and it's just like there's nothing more important than your drug. And if you're not doing your drug, you're worried about getting your drug and you're worried about running out, and oh my God, it just runs your life. And so now none of that is in your life. And you can just live true, authentically, without, any of this hiding or this fracturing. Because when you're in addiction, there's a misalignment between how you're acting, how you're thinking and feeling, and who you want to be as a person. That's what causes all this chaos and internal discord and discomfort in you, is because you really want to be a good person, but you're out of alignment with that. And that discord is what really drives us nuts inside.
Yeah, not to mention the dishonesty and the lying and the running around and doing things that, yeah, you never would do, but it's all for that feeling that you chase. So, yeah, what a powerful experience. Oh my gosh. Before we go, is there anything you want to say to the audience regarding this topic, and how recovery happens, neuroscience, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I just really like to encourage people, because I remember how lost and hopeless I was. As I mentioned to you before, I was taking 50 pain pills, drinking 2 bottles of vodka a day. I mean, I could not go 10 minutes without using again in order to stop the withdrawing. My body was about to shut down, and I was hopeless. Like, I didn't know. I felt like, death warmed over. I didn't know what was next. I was 52 years old. I had gotten myself to rehab somehow, and I was just sitting there wondering how I'd ever gotten there. And here I am today, 12 years later, living a completely different life. And so the point of that is, it's not about me, it's about the possibilities and the hope, that everyone and anyone, the brain is forgiving, it's willing to, change, adapt, and evolve. But you just have to summon the courage, the awareness that you have a problem, get that out of the way, and the courage to take the next step and ask for help. These things are very hard to do on your own. It really helps to work with somebody, and whatever, however you're going to pursue this, work with somebody that's been there before, that knows the path, and can help you. Because there's a lot of help out there. And then, I assure you that life gets better. It can get better, and it will get better, but you just have to be willing to take that first step.
Yes, and you're such a good example of that. So grateful that you're still here with us, and that you were able to fight through that and now use your experience to help other people. Thank you so much for being a guest again on The Advisor. And yeah, I look forward to the next episode and more insight into this topic that so many people are struggling with.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. It's great to be on with you, and you as well. I'd like to turn it back on you, and that, you've done such a great job in your life, and I know you know what I'm talking about, and I know you've helped a lot of people, get well. So, congrats to you as well.
Thank you so much. I really, really try and just be grateful and not take it for granted. And I know that's what you do as well. So we're a team now. So we're out there trying to change the
Yes, ma'am.
world. And to our audience, thank you so much for listening. And like we said, we know this is a topic that is triggering for some and sensitive to others. And if there's anything that we can do to help, please put it in the comments and we will send you some resources, and George has so many free tools on his website that he can offer. So please do not be shy and don't struggle alone. Until next time, I'm Lisa Urbanski with The Advisor. Bye for now.